Did you have a hard time getting into Skype?
Yes.
It was truly getting
into my bank or something. Yes. It was just three-factor identification. So it was just like, are you kidding me?
Emails. They were going to my trash. Yeah. I guess I had blocked Microsoft at some point. Then I had to update the app. Then I couldn't get in again. Yeah. And then the microphone was working. I was like, I'm going to have to create a new Skype account.
Yeah. Luckily, I got on an hour ago just to I got to make sure all my stuff still works from the move. I haven't tested any of this. And so I logged into Slack. And I'm really glad I did this early because this could have taken forever.
I just started panicking. Yeah. Welcome to Feeling It, a podcast where we discuss TV, movies, pop culture, and whether or not we are feeling it. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show.
And here we go.
Come on, walk and talk.
All right, here we go. You
guys want to hear something neat?
It's showtime.
Hold your ears, folks. Here we go.
See what you can do now.
Take your position.
All right, ladies, buckle up.
Let's do this.
Hold on to your butts.
Seriously?
Listen to me very, very carefully.
Hey, it's me again.
Eat him up.
Enjoy.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to Feeling It. Each week on this show, we like to share what pieces of pop culture we're really feeling. Whatever show, movie, song, or tech we just can't get out of our heads. This week, however, is not a normal week. This week, we'll be announcing each of our top 10 films of 2023. But before we get started with all of that, and before we do a little bit of catch-up on what the pod situation has been lately, let's introduce ourselves, and when we do, let's answer the question, what was your favorite movie-going experience of 2023? So, not the best movie you saw, but the best surrounding experience.
I'm Lucas Wright. Here we go. We're already going to get into it.
We're rusty, by the way.
Very, very rusty. In my head, I was almost like, I'm Lucas Wright from Chicago.
Not true.
I am Lucas Wright, now from London. and the best movie-going experience I had in 2023 was, I think it's pretty obvious for me, but it was Barbenheimer. getting to watch both of those movies in the same day in a theater with so many people who were excited about doing the exact same thing felt incredible. It was, I think, probably what it feels like to go to the Eras Tour. So many people are there. You're making eye contact with people, just absolutely thrilled to be in the theater. And I was just like, this is not what movie theaters feel like anymore. And it was incredible.
That is incredible. I agree. Barbenheimer was so, so much fun. Let me introduce myself. My name is Sandra Amstutz. I am still from Nashville, Tennessee. And my favorite movie-going experience of 2023 was when I took a group of friends to go see Dix the Musical in a movie theater. Have you seen Dix the Musical, Lucas?
I have not, but I've seen the trailer for it.
Yeah. Let me tell you, one, I guess the thing is, I go to the movies alone quite a bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so one, just the idea of being at the movies with a group of friends, we're all mm-hmm. as a group going to see this movie together, is just so fun.
Yeah.
If you are unfamiliar with Dix the Musical, it is a raunchy, absurd, freaky deaky show. And it is the kind of movie that you want to be around people when you're witnessing it for the first time, just so that all of you can look at each other in moments of incredulity, in disbelief, and then also it is hilarious. I loved it. I had a great time, but I think it's the thing that's best, taken in with people that have a similar sense of humor to you, which I was. So it was a really lovely experience.
Yep.
So we, like I mentioned earlier, this is our top 10 episode of the year where we talk about our favorite movies of 2023. But before we do that, if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you may have noticed that we've been gone for quite a bit of time.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've been recording episodes. Have they not been being released?
I've been hoarding them in a Google Drive folder.
Just monologuing to myself about all the movies I'm watching.
So our last episode was back in July for Oppenheimer. And yes. It is now the end of January of 2024.
Which is definitely the latest we've ever done our top 10 films. We've gotten close, but this is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is when I prefer to do it. You always try to get me.
I try. I really try it.
I need the whole month of January to catch up.
Well, it ultimately. Turns out I do too now. So for those who don't know, in August, I packed up our house and we moved. We did a tour of the country, basically, going and seeing family and friends and stuff like that, while all of our stuff got shipped to London, which is where we live now. My job has moved me over here, and so I am adjusting to not only the UK time zones, but also the accents and the movies that get released over here, which are quite different. I'm getting a lot of French cinema over here, which is very fun to see.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's been an adventure trying to find... You forget what you have so ingrained in your knowledge about how movies and theaters and stuff like that works, that when you move to a different country, you're like, I have to relearn which are the chains I want to go to, which I don't, because they're all new. So one interesting thing about theaters here is every seat is a different price depending on where in the theater it is for a lot of the chains. Yeah. So like the
concert
good seats,
rules.
It's concert rules, yes, in a movie theater, which is not a huge fan of that.
How like vast is the price difference? Like, what are we talking?
I'd say it's within probably a £7 price difference, depending on the theater. So some are like, it's, you know, $1 to sit one row up, that kind of thing. But the closer you get to kind of quote unquote the good seats, the more expensive it is. But
that's,
yeah. You know, so it's not a wide range, but it is like you have to think about it when you're choosing your seat.
There has been chatter about bringing that model to the United States and some of the chains.
Yep. America, the last meritocracy in the theaters. I know. So
here's what I would say to that. I obviously don't love the idea of like the best seats being the most expensive.
Yeah.
What I do think is smart would be to discount those like front two row that nobody wants, you know?
Yes. Which that is nice because people actually take those here. Like a lot of people just won't go to the theater if it's in those front two rows because those are super cheap. You'll see people actually sitting in them here, which is nice. So,
I mean, I don't think I would go to a movie and sit in those front two rows unless it was like the last time I did was when a group of us, it was for A Quiet Place. A group of us showed up late to the theater and that was all that was left. And we were already there. So it was kind of like, oh, well, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
But nowadays with like booking online ahead of time, I would refuse. Yeah,
same. The way they market it here is like the good seats are the normal price and then all of the quote-unquote bad seats are discounted is kind of how it's thought about. I don't know how accurate that actually is, but you know,
I was gonna say, like, are the good seats like a similar price to what you're paying in the US?
They are. Yeah.
Okay, well then, so that's not
it's not
too
bad.
Dramatic.
It's not bad at all. It is just something that I was surprised by and had to actually like pay attention to when you know, when you're purchasing stuff. But the other annoying thing is they in the US, you know, there's ads and then there's trailers and then the movie starts. And they will turn off the lights usually after the ads. Basically, that's kind of when the quote unquote movie starts, is when the ads kick on.
Depends on your theater these days, though. Let me tell you, there are some chains that are keeping the lights on during
the trailers. Okay, yeah. I was going to ask about that because here the lights are on and people are talking during all of the trailers. Like it's just a full free for all during the trailers, and nothing happens until the lights go off and the movie actually starts here.
Do you find that in the UK, the amount of time from showtime, official showtime, to the movie actually starting is longer or shorter than in the US?
Way longer.
Interesting.
It's at minimum 30 to 45 minutes before the movie actually starts.
That is long.
The ads start at the movie showtime.
Wow.
So like if you walk into the theater like a minute before the actual showtime, the screen is dark. They will turn on the screen for the first time when the show starts.
Interesting.
And that's when you start getting the ads.
I'm assuming that like everyone's accommodating for that. Like people if a movie starts at 7, everyone's showing up at like 7:35.
For sure. Yeah, the first time I went to a theater, I showed up like an American and was the only one in the theater. And I was like, the movie is about to start. What is happening? And the movie did not start for another 45 minutes. So.
Wow, that is wild. Because I thought that like I typically go to AMC's. That's my like chain when I'm not going to like an independent theater. And for the most part, I think AMC's take anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes before the movie starts. And I thought that was long.
Yeah. Yeah, no, wow. We're in a rough spot over here. I went to a movie on Friday and I left my house at the time the movie started.
Well, and that has become my new strategy. Is yeah. My IMC is 15 minutes away from my house, so I leave yeah. when the movie starts, and it's honestly I love it because I never have to question like what time do I need to leave. It's always like set for me.
Yes, yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, yeah. So like you mentioned, you had this big move, and we decided to just take a long break while you were getting adjusted to like being in yeah. this new country and you know going through this major life change. And so, yeah, we've had a while off from the podcast, our longest break we've ever had.
Yes.
But one thing that I'm really happy to report is that we are coming back to the podcast. This is not an ending. But because Lucas is in this new country with a completely different release schedule for TVs and movies than I have here in the U.S., the podcast is going to look a little bit different. One thing that we've decided to do moving forward, at least for the time being, is we're going to switch to releasing episodes just once a month. We're going to talk about movies that we both have seen, if we are able to see the same movies, depending on release schedules. Or we might just be catching each other up and catching everyone who listens up on what movies and pop culture we're really feeling that month. Yeah, Lucas, how are you feeling about this like new change?
I'm excited. I think it's going to be fun. You guys cannot wait for all of the British reality TV shows that I'm going to start recommending.
Oh, wow. That is, I haven't even considered what a plus that's going to be for my life.
It's I know, like right?
The in that I'm going to have on yeah. the reality TV circuit.
Yeah. I was already an Anglophile when it comes to media, and this is probably just going to up that level a lot. So,
well, I'm really excited for us to navigate like what a global pop culture like review experience looks like for the yeah. two of us.
We've gone worldwide.
Yes. I'm also just mostly excited about just like you'll have so many new experiences and viewpoints being in another country and like what that will bring to the podcast and to my like relationship with you. I think that's really exciting.
It's true. I think it's going to be a huge learning experience, and I think it's going to be fun to track that through the podcast.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, is there anything else you want to chat about before we jump into our top tens?
Let's do it.
Okay, so first question I have for you is how many 2023 movies did you watch this year? Let's give our listeners like some context of where we're coming at.
Yes. So this year, it was actually the first year that I was able to watch 365 movies in the year.
Whoa!
I watched a lot of movies this year. The goal started somewhere in the summer when I had already kind of, I've been hitting the mark, and I was like, I got to go for it. I really got to try. Part of that was I started just waking up early in the morning and just watching a movie every day just for fun.
Cool.
With the way my team had shifted, I was starting work later. And so I was like, I have free time in the morning. Let's just do it. And then it turned into an everyday thing. And then finally, I was like, I gotta actually start cramming in other times as well. So,
yeah.
So the end of the year was crazy, but I ended up watching 365 movies.
Exactly.
On the dot. Wow. I watched When Harry Met Sally as my New Year's Eve movie. To round it out. So it was perfect, but
so incredible.
As far as 2023 movies, I've seen 111 movies that came out in the year 2023.
Wow. So you've smoked me, which is no surprise. Like that's a huge amount of movies.
It was a lot. I will not be doing that again. It was too
yeah.
much.
Yeah. I've seen 41 2023
nice.
Movies, which is, I think, respectable, but you know,
yeah.
nowhere near approaching
yeah.
your numbers. With you having seen so many of the films that were released in 2023, what's your overarching opinion of 2023 as like a year in cinema?
I think it's a great year. I think we have a ton of good movies
this
year.
I think so too.
I think my assumption is we will have a lot of the same movies on our lists, even though I saw so much.
That's interesting because I was kind of coming into this assuming we would have more variety because of how much you saw.
Any other year I would have said that. But this year I think we have a ton of good movies, but I think the cream of the crop really is in a...
The good is really good.
The good is really, really good this year.
Yeah.
So, and I think, I mean, we'll talk about it I think once we get to the end of our list, but I think this is also a good Oscar year. Like seeing seeing the movies that were nominated. I'm really shocked that a lot of the movies on our lists are probably going to show up at the Oscars too, which is, I think, a rarity. So
yeah, I rarely have this many Best Picture nominees on my top 10 list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what movies were you not able to get a chance to see before we're making this list that you think might have had a chance on this list?
The three movies that I couldn't see, and the only reason I didn't see them is because of UK release dates. They're just not here yet. Are American Fiction, Origin, and The Taste of Things. Those are three movies that I'm still very excited about that could have made my list, but we'll see when they get here.
Well, let me take a moment to go on my first rant of the podcast episode. I've done this rant before. This is not new to anyone. It is total bullshit that The Taste of Things is considered a 2023 movie.
100% agree.
This movie is not being released, even in limited release,
no,
in the US or the UK until February of 2024.
Yeah.
This is a 2024 movie. So that being said, I have also not seen The Taste of Things. It is a movie that I, from how it's described, could very easily be at the top of my list. Yeah, like, who knows?
Same. I saw the trailer and I was like, this is it. I cannot wait for this to be at the very top of my list this year. And it's not out yet, which is now extremely frustrating.
Here's what I want to propose to you, Lucas. Yeah. I want to see what your thought is. For our purposes, do we just consider this a 2024 movie?
I think we should. From what I've seen, a lot of people in the UK treat UK release dates as their year. But at least for movies like The Taste of Things, where like, no one's seen it. Truly no
Obviously,
one's seen it.
I'm biased in basing things on my, like, US perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
But if your movie isn't available anywhere in the country to see at the end of January, then it's not a movie that was released last year. Like,
I can
really get on board with movies that are put in limited release in December and then wide release at the beginning of January. Right. I am totally fine with that. But this February nonsense does not fly with me.
Well, I mean, so Ava DuVernay's Origin had like a week qualifying run or whatever in New York. And then it still doesn't even have a UK release date. So, like, who knows when that movie is coming here? But people are talking about it in the US like it was a last year movie. So
if we're considering The Taste of Things a 2024 movie, then there's only really one movie that I had planned on seeing that I didn't see.
All right.
And that is The Zone of Interest.
Oh, okay.
I ultimately had a really hard time bringing myself to the theater to see this film emotionally. For anyone who doesn't know, the premise of The Zone of Interest is a movie about a German family literally living next door on the other side of the wall of Auschwitz during the Holocaust. And like the patriarch of the family is like running Auschwitz. And it's about this family just like living their lives while the horrors of the Holocaust is happening on the other side of their wall. And that is a tough subject matter that I just had I couldn't bring myself to view yet, at least.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think I'm not a fan of Holocaust movies. It's just like, it's just hard. Like there are a lot of great and important ones. Like, I mean, Schindler's List is one obviously that comes to mind, or documentaries like Shoah, that I think do an absolutely fantastic job of like showing the horrors and atrocities of what happened, but they are hard to watch. And I do not blame anybody for being like, you know what? I can't do it right now. So
yeah, it's also the only Best Picture nominee that I haven't seen.
Okay. Will you see it by the time the Oscars happens? Or is it
that's the big question. Yeah. Is like, part of me wants to as a completist.
Yeah.
And then there's another part of me that's like, maybe I don't. Who knows? It could change. It was my opinion on it was changing throughout this past week. I was planning on seeing it this week. And then every time there was an opportunity, it was like, no.
Not right now. No. Yeah. No, I feel that.
Yeah. But other than that, I feel like for the most part, I saw what I wanted to see. There's very good movies that I just didn't prioritize, you know, that I'll see at another time. And movies that I think I probably would really like, but probably wouldn't be on my top 10 list that are, you know, a little more lowbrow that I still haven't seen. But as far as like critically acclaimed stuff, I saw what I wanted to see.
That's great.
Yeah, I feel good about
that's
that.
That's the way the year should end every time.
Yeah, so. I feel like more caught up this year than I ever have.
Good. That's great.
Yeah. Okay, well, that being said, are you ready to get started with our top tens?
Let's do it. I'm thrilled.
Do you want to go first this year?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay.
Let's start with my number 10. My number 10 is The Killer. Michael Fassbender, if you haven't seen this one, plays a freelance assassin operating in our modern gig economy, you know? He says early on in this movie that, like, everyone is either the one or the many. And I think in this movie, he's a man who views himself as the one. And I think it's very interesting to see kind of where in his life that reality doesn't match up. So I never thought we'd get like a David Fincher movie that was this, I think, clean and simple, but I really, really enjoyed it. It to me, it's like it's an exploration of like consumerism set within a very tight action thriller. And I love it.
Good. This is not a movie that I decided not to watch this movie this year.
Yeah.
I really love David Fincher, but this movie did not call to me. And so, yeah, I missed out on it. But I've heard that so many people really, really took a lot from it.
Yeah, it's very good. It is definitely not a movie for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to come in strong with my number 10. I'm going to come in hot, I should say. It's controversial, but I had to be true to myself. My number 10 is Saltburn.
Oh!
What did you think I was going to say?
I'm going to save it for later because I'm sure okay. It'll come up.
Interesting. Wow, I can't. I'm so curious. But no, my number 10 is Saltburn. Here's what I'm going to say. When I was making my top 10 list, ultimately I had a top 13 that was like really hard for me to like narrow down. And I kept moving around my list, you know, this is the hardest part, is like cutting out, you know, those darlings at the end that are towards the end of your list. And sometimes Saltburn was on the list, sometimes it wasn't. But when it really came down to it, I had to put this movie on my list because I had so much fun with this movie. Here's the thing about Saltburn. There's a lot of critique of it, and I don't even like, I'm not going to argue with any of the critique. I don't think that this movie is, like, intelligent or has something really important to say or is, like, a masterwork of writing. I don't think any of that, okay? I'm not going to defend, like, Saltburn on this, like, cinematic quality level.
Yeah.
What I am going to say is that I had a fucking blast watching it. I was thrilled the entire time. I think it's so stylish. A lot of people do not like Emerald Fennell as a filmmaker, and I am in the bag for Emerald Fennell. Like, her taste for things is so in line with my taste. There's also been a lot of talk about Saltburn being like a weird slash freaky movie. Some people being like disgusted by the things that happen in this film. And then on the other end of the spectrum, some people being like, wow, y'all are so lame for being shocked by Saltburn. Like, you don't know real cinema if you're shocked by Saltburn, right? Yeah. I find myself on the perfect level of that spectrum where it's like, this is exactly how freaky I want movies to get. Like, not much more, but
not
I
much
love
more.
This level. Yeah. Yeah, I had so much fun. I think it's so sexy. I think it's weird in the right ways. I think it's so funny. And it has the best ending scene of the year, in my opinion. And I think ultimately, another thing I really like about Saltburn is that, like, you can't deny how fun it has been to, like, have it in the conversation and how it's caused so much conversation in like film Twitter and even just in regular social circles. It's like, I love a movie that like has a big pop culture impact in this way. And so, yeah, it's my number 10 and I'm sticking to it.
If I were to describe this movie, I would quote, the excellent comedy Blades of Glory. No one knows what it means, but it's provocative. It gets the people going.
Yeah.
That I'm is okay Saltburn. With that. It is absolutely Saltburn. I did not love this movie, but I also did not hate this movie. But I will tell you, the Brits love this movie. People
are
going crazy for it. It's wild.
Which, here's the thing. Like, there's been a lot of chatter in the U.S. about this movie being, like, dumb, especially when it comes to, like, class politics, let's say. And I'm not going to defend its class politics and, like, its, what it, you know, its message. But I do think that the people in the U.S. can intrinsically not understand, like, class politics of the UA, of the UK.
Agreed.
And the UK audiences are understanding this movie in a way that we never will.
Yeah. When the US talks about middle class when it comes to this movie, they are talking about an entirely different thing. And the way people see each other with those classes and the way people interact within those classes, it's entirely different. So I
And that class is not just about money. Of course it is also it is about money, but like that is not just what it's about.
Right.
It is about like this secret world or like different languages being used, you know? Mm-hmm. And and I like the way that this movie like picks at that and makes fun of that. I think that this movie is having fun. I think it's pulpy. I don't think this movie is taking itself very seriously.
Yeah.
I don't think it's this like grand drama. Part of me thinks that like if Emerald Fennell had not been nominated, had not won an Oscar when she made Promising Young Woman, that we wouldn't be like holding her to this bar of like important drama, you know?
Yeah, agreed. But I also think people misjudge Promising Young Woman. I think people just have a hard time understanding what Emerald Fennell is trying to do with her movies.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But it's just, she's trying to do something different than everybody else is trying to, is expecting her to do. But she's making what she wants. She's accomplishing what she's setting out for.
I'm going to say something maybe a little provocative. Promising Young Woman was a very important movie to me emotionally, and I ranked it really high on my list the year it came out. I think Saltburn might be a better movie than Promising Young Woman, even though I'm ranking it lower on my list.
Wow.
I think it's like, I think Promising Young Woman tries to do a lot and succeeds in some areas and fails in some areas.
Yeah.
And I think Saltburn is trying to be like a pulpy, fun, like thrilling, sexy movie. I don't think it's trying for anything like grand or important. And because of the like that like lower ambition, I think it's succeeding more.
I don't know if it's a better movie, but I would say that it is succeeding more at what it's trying to do than Promising Young Woman.
Yeah. For sure. I think that's what I'm getting at ultimately. Yeah. Okay. What is your number nine movie of the year?
My number nine movie is 1001. This is a movie that I saw a couple months ago and didn't necessarily forget about, but it just kind of like I loved it and then I moved on and it wasn't in the conversation a lot. And so I wasn't thinking about it a lot. But coming back to the movies that I really loved and kind of trying to make this list at the end of the year, I looked at all of the movies and this was one that stood out to me as really powerful. It feels weird to talk about a movie that's set in the mid 90s as like a period piece. but that's really what this is. Tiana Taylor plays an ex-con in New York City who kidnaps her 6-year-old son out of a bad foster home to try and build a life with him. And we see their relationship mature as he grows into a teenager and how that specific, you know, incident kind of makes a huge spot in their life that they have to kind of navigate around for the rest of, you know, forever. It also is just very specifically a New York movie and how New York evolved during kind of the turn of the millennium. And it's a movie about what it means to be a family. And I think some of the good and the bad and the very difficult and the unknown future of loving people. And I think that is one of the things that makes it feel like a typical, like, Oscar-y, like, relationship movie, but kind of just pushes it a little bit further than I've seen in a lot of places. So that's 1001. It is very good.
What you said you saw it a while ago. What part of the year did this come out in?
This came out in October-ish, I think. Let me see.
Okay. Because this is a movie that I've only, like, even heard mumblings about, like, in the past week or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I
know people were upset that it didn't get nominated.
Yeah. But yeah, now it sounds incredible and like something I would really want to see.
It's really good. I think you would like it. This is one of the movies that I would recommend to almost everyone.
Okay, that's great to hear.
I don't have a lot of those on my list.
Oh, interesting. So. Okay, cool. Well, I'm so glad that you brought that up because, yeah, now I'm adding it to my watch list. So my number 9 of the year is going to be a movie that I have, like, probably the least amount to say on this podcast because I saw it a while ago, like, in the how long ago was it? I guess in the spring, it feels like. And I haven't rewatched it. It's one of the only movies that I've on this list that I've only seen once. But it is a movie that has stuck with me and that I do think is very special. And that is You Hurt My Feelings. It's a movie from Nicole Holofcener starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And for anyone who's unfamiliar, Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays a writer who has this like loving, supportive marriage with her husband, played by Tobias Menzies. And he is like really encouraging about like her writing and her novel. And one day she overhears him talking to someone else and he tells that person that he actually hates her latest book. And so the rest of the movie is about these two people in this marriage, dealing with the fact that like he's been lying to her in the efforts to be supportive. And what does it mean when you and your partner lose that trust, and what is lying in a marriage? You know, how much is lying and how much is just getting through a marriage? And have you seen this movie, Lucas?
I have. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think this movie is so smart, and I just love what it has to say about like how we all treat each other and how sensitive we all can be and how our views of ourselves are inevitably impacted by the views of the people we love, or the views of us of the people we love. Mm-hmm. I also just really, really loved a movie about a marriage that is about two people that are older, that are still like very much in love with each other and like have a happy marriage that still has it, you know, things that they have to work through. I think so often, like when you have movies about marriage, which spoiler alert, quite a bit of the movies on my list this year in some part are about like the complexities of navigating a marriage.
Yeah.
Most of the time those movies are intensely dramatic. Like they're about couples going through turmoil, like, or like really tense conversations. And I just loved how like caring and thoughtful this movie was. And it was about people that are nice to each other that still have stuff to work through.
I think movies about like the small conflicts that like lead to larger insecurities, I think are super interesting. And I think this movie does it really well of like, are you insecure about how good you are at your job? And that just like, if both people in this couple, I think have that insecurity. And so them picking at it on either side, I think in this movie really opens up an interesting conversation around two people who really love each other, but also have these insecurities that they don't talk about and they need to express more. It's really good.
Yeah. Another thing that's big for me crafting this list is rewatchability is really important to me. And I haven't rewatched this movie, but it is a movie I would be happy to rewatch.
Yeah.
And not only would I be happy to rewatch this movie, I want 100 more movies exactly like this one to watch every day. Like, this is so just like up my alley and like my comfort zone. I'm really excited that it made my list this year.
That's great.
What is your number 8 movie of the year?
Number 8 for me is Poor Things by Yorgos Lanthimos. I can never say it. I don't really know how to explain the plot of this movie. When I've talked to people, most people I've talked to about it know what it is in advance. So it's like, okay, I can get past that part. But anybody who I've talked to about it is like, what is it? I'm like, well, it's... And I guess like the way I describe it is like a woman in like a Frankenstein's monster situation. has to venture out and explore the world. And she's growing and maturing and learning about equality and liberation and capitalism. And she's learning the term owning the means of production and stuff like that. So I love Yorgos Lanthimos movies, but every time one comes out, I think maybe this isn't the one for me. And yeah. I was thinking that up until like 20 minutes in when Mark Ruffalo shows up and plays this ridiculous lawyer. And I thought, okay, I'm on board with whatever ends up happening here.
Yeah.
So his performance is fantastic. Emma Stone's performance is fantastic. I really, really loved, why did I just forget his name? Who plays the
Willem
dad?
Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe. I loved Willem Dafoe in this movie. He is, I guess, playing the Frankenstein and the Frankenstein's monster as well in this movie. But he just has such a loving heart for a character that you are – that feels out of place for. So I really enjoyed this movie a lot. I thought it was the rated R version of Barbie. I think a lot of people have talked about, which I think is, I think makes sense from a large scale standpoint, but I think doesn't get into the details of both of those movies that make it, I think, more interesting. But I get why you could say that.
I'll talk about it later, but there is a different 2023 movie that I think is a great comparison to Barbie and a great like double feature with Barbie that is not Poor Things.
Okay.
But Poor Things is the one that I've heard a lot of people like immediately jump to.
Right. Right.
I saw this movie and I loved it. It honestly, for most of the year, I assumed it would be on my top 10 list. But it kind of got edged out just a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, I don't have anything bad to say about this movie other than others were just a little bit more, you know, up my speed or compelling to me. But this movie is like, I think it is visually the most interesting movie I've seen all year.
Yeah.
The production design of this film is something that like I want to soak in. I loved it so, so much. I laughed at this movie. I love how like creative it is, and I think that Emma Stone is a marvel. I've always thought that Emma Stone is a marvel, but she continues to like prove herself in that way. Yorgos Lanthimos is someone that I'm a little hot and cold on, like, and this one I was definitely like really excited by, and it makes me excited for more of his work.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, my number
eight.
My number eight. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I almost skipped ahead. Gosh. Okay. My number eight is a movie that I have a little bit of recency bias on. I saw it this past week, and I can't get it out of my head. And so I'm just leading with my emotions here. I'm also just some certain clarification on where I'm at emotionally. For anyone who doesn't know, my father passed away in 2023, and so I've been grieving, reckoning with his death and our relationship, and so I have found a lot of comfort this year in movies about grief, or movies that make me cry very hard, you know, either or. Anyway, so that is why my number eight is The Iron Claw.
Ooh.
Yeah. So The Iron Claw stars Zac Efron. Zac Efron, as most people know. I don't know why I defaulted to Zachary.
Went for the full
one. This is his Oscar bait, you know? Like, it feels like he's graduated to Zachary.
Yeah.
It is a sort of a biopic about the Von Erich brothers, which was this wrestling family in Texas in the 1980s. And it's about, you know, a group of brothers that are all that participated in like, whatever the equivalent of, you know, WWE is, I guess, like in the 80s.
Yeah.
There is an actual name for it that I've forgotten. And it is a tragedy. I won't spoil all the events of the film, but just there is death in the film and it is a tragic story. And I was swept away by this movie. It is hard to watch at times because it is such a tragic story. But the first half of this film is so full of energy and made me so nostalgic for Texas. I was born in the 80s. I didn't grow up in Texas in the 80s. But like, it is set in a Texas that feels so familiar to me. And watching it during that first half, I kept just being like, God, I love Texas so much. I am one of those, like, people that wears my love for Texas on my sleeve. And so, yeah, just that alone had me really excited. But then it also has this all-star cast. Zac Efron, I've always been a fan of. But I think he's doing his career best work in this movie. I think he should have gotten an Oscar nomination, possibly. Like, at very least, he should have been, like, a front runner for it. Jeremy Allen White, who we love from The Bear, is doing really wonderful work in this.
Yeah.
Harris Dickinson from Triangle of Sadness is so good in this movie. Maura Tierney plays their mother. She's incredible. It's just a really, really great cast coming together. And I thought it was a really special movie about family and masculinity and obligation and ambition and dread. And it was, I loved it. One of the main reasons I have this on my list, if you have seen this movie, I'm not going to spoil it, but I will just give like a clue. There is a scene that takes place on a river towards the end of the film that gutted me. And I found to be so incredibly beautiful. And that scene alone makes it worthy enough to be on my top 10 list of the year. Have you seen this movie?
I have not seen it. It has not come out here till I think next weekend.
Okay. Is it a movie you've been thinking about seeing or wanting to see?
It is not. It is one that I knew I would see eventually, but it is not one that I've been excited about or dying to see. I'm not a huge fan of wrestling, also not a huge fan of Texas, so like all of those things, I was just like, I'll get to it eventually, but
yeah.
Big, huge fan of the cast for sure, so.
Yeah, I recommend it. I think I recommend it to anyone with the caveat that it is like, it is a tragedy. Yeah. Like that is what this movie it is. And so you just have to emotionally prepare yourself for that. Okay, let's move on, Lucas. What is your number 7 movie of the year?
My number 7 movie of the year is The Zone of Interest.
I was really curious if it was going to make it.
Look, I did not think it was going to. I was like, I need to watch this for the end of the year. I'm sure I will love it as a, you know, as a movie. Say it's a great piece of art. Yeah, it's an achievement, but will not end up on like, these are my favorite movies of the year list kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And walking out of it, I still thought the same thing. I was like, that was actually incredible. I'm happy I went and saw it. I'm done now. But I have not stopped thinking about it the entire time. So I think when I heard that Jonathan Glazer was making a movie like this, you know, about the commandant of Auschwitz and his family, I was like, that is going to be difficult to watch. But also, I don't want to empathize with these people, you know, like,
right.
That's not what I want out of a movie. I think it's, of course, it's deeply unsettling, but I think it's in a different way than other Holocaust movies. So like, we never actually see what's happening in the camp. Mm-hmm. We're just hanging out with the family as they go about their normal lives, raising kids, complaining about work, having friends and family mm-hmm. over for dinner, all of the things that I feel like are typical for people, but all in the shadow of, you know, one of the most heinous places in history. And you can dimly hear the sounds from the other side of the wall. And we see the smoke from the chimneys and the ashes that are used to fertilize the garden. And the horror of the movie is that you can see the mental compartmentalization that's happening in real time for these people mm-hmm. as we see them navigate this world almost as if they just are living next to a, you know, an auto factory next door.
Yeah.
And they do a great job of, again, never making you empathize with the characters, but just showing kind of that banality of evil and how someone who, you know, quote unquote, is just doing their job is able to hold both the reality of like what they're doing and feel like they've morally separated themselves from it at the same time. Mm. Sandra Hüller is fantastic in this. She plays the wife. She is a lot of this movie, as the person who kind of runs the house there. And what she does in this movie is chilling because it's so normal, mm-hmm. And just fascinating how much she's disconnected from, everything. She has said in interviews that she never wanted to play a Nazi. She's a German actress, and she was like, I never want to play a Nazi. I think this is perfect for her, and I'm so glad that she got nominated for this as well. Or she didn't get nominated for this. Never mind. She got nominated for Anatomy of the Fall. I wish she'd also gotten nominated for this.
Imagine if she had gotten nominated for both. What Double, a year.
Yeah, that would have been insane.
I mean, it's a huge year for her.
It really is. Yeah. So I think you will enjoy watching it is the wrong word, but I think you will enjoy the process of experience a movie like this in a way that is different, I think, than other kind of painful movies, I'll say.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. That is actually really helpful to hear from someone I know personally that has seen it. Did Sandra Hüller, what's her big movie? Did she star in Tony Erdmann? Is that the movie that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tony Erdmann? I
have not. No.
She's having an incredible year, and it does make me want to go revisit that movie.
Same. Same.
My first experience with her was in that robot movie.
Yeah, I'm your man. Yeah.
In that tiny little role. I know. Like, so funny to, and that was very recent. You know, it's not like she, well, that was a long time ago. It's so interesting to have her in this tiny role recently, and now she's like one of the biggest actresses of the year, you know?
Yeah. I watched her in Justin Trier's previous movie. It might not be the immediate previous one, but one of her older movies called Sybil was the first time that I saw her. And that movie is really good. I think you would like it.
Oh, okay.
I think
it did not
go over well with most critics, but I enjoyed it.
And I'll need to look it up.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely need to look it up because my number seven movie of the year is Anatomy of a Fall.
Yes.
This movie,
I love it,
is incredible. Here's where some of my bias is showing. I love a courtroom drama. Like, you and I, we have our movies that we like, right? And like heist films are one of them. Yep. I love a rom-com specifically. You love a Western. But I really love a courtroom drama. And that's ultimately what this movie is. It's more than that. It's a marriage story.
It's a classic family story, honestly. Yeah. A husband falls out of an attic window. The wife goes on trial for murder. And the blind son is, you know, the conflicting key witness. So we've all been there.
Right. And I think this movie is so incredibly well written. I think it has so much going for it. I think Sandra Hüller is incredible for it. I'm really glad that she got nominated for this. Being a courtroom drama, I'm only used to U.S. courtroom dramas. And to take on my first viewing of what I'm assuming is a standard French courtroom drama experience was wild. I was thrilled by it.
Yeah. Someone needs to tell us if this is actually how French courts work or if this is just
It's so interesting because that is the conversation like amongst everyone who's talking about this movie is like, wow, are French courts really like this? And I haven't heard a definitive answer from anyone, you know, that
I haven't either, but like people are just having like panel discussions, you know, with everyone, like the defendant gets to cross-examine the witness just out of the blue. Like I don't know. It makes for amazing drama, but boy, does it seem like chaos.
It is such chaos. When this, I don't think is a big spoiler for the movie. When the prosecuting lawyer just gets to read from the defendant's novel as evidence.
Yeah.
A fictional novel being like, let's take this into account.
Yeah.
For anyone who has not heard of Anatomy of a Fall, the premise is that a woman and her son and her husband are in a remote house in the French Alps, and the son goes for a walk, and when the son comes back, the father has seemingly fallen from the top of the house and is dead on the ground outside, and he and the wife were the only two people in the house at the time that it happened. And the big question immediately that the police have and that the rest of the movie has is, did he fall or was she involved in his death somehow?
Yeah.
And it goes to trial. And then the rest of the movie is you're sitting with this question throughout the whole movie and you're sitting through this trial and bits and pieces are uncovered about what this family unit was like. And then even more specifically, what the marriage between these two people was like. I think the whole movie is really good. But the big scene between the husband and wife, who are anyone who's seen it, they'll know what I'm talking about, I think is masterclass writing and acting. I found this year that I'm really relishing, like, the big fight between a husband and wife. like, this is juicy. Like, this is where I want to live, you know?
I need to rewatch Marriage Story.
I do, ultimately, yeah. So, yeah, I just thought that this was thrilling. And I love what it had to say about privacy, about our expectations of women, our expectations of marriage and what marriage should look like, and ultimately, like, a criminal system, mm-hmm. Prosecution system. So, yeah, I really loved Anatomy of Fall. Did you see it? Did you like it?
I did.
Do you want to talk about it later?
I saw it. I liked about it. I'll talk about it now because it's my number six.
Wow, we really worked that out so perfectly.
Perfect. For me, this movie isn't about if she did it or not. I know with every, you know, trial movie, that's the thing that's everybody's talking about the entire time. But, like, what the movie is about is, if there is no way of knowing the answer, can you tell yourself a story that you can live with for the rest of your life about what happened? And what does it mean for you? What does it mean for those that you love? I think it's beautifully told. It's beautifully acted. And I can't imagine seeing like an American movie like this. This felt so French, so just European in the way it was handling kind of some of these relationships. And I really enjoyed kind of seeing that perspective on a lot of this. Like you said, it talks a lot about what is femininity, what is a relationship between two married people, what is a relationship between you and your child. Like, I thought it dove into a lot of difficult topics in a way that kind of merged them all together really seamlessly.
Seamlessly and so entertaining.
Like, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. This is not a boring French movie at all.
Yes. So. Like, it was so juicy and at times very fun. Like, mm-hmm. The actor that plays the prosecutor in this movie was in the movie French Movie BPM that I adore.
And I forgot about that. Yeah.
Eating this role up. He's having the time of his life in this role. And he's a joy to watch because he's having so much fun with this role. Yeah. And so I just want to point out that this movie is about, like, the somewhat serious topics, but I never felt like weighed down by the movie. I felt like it kept pace so well, and I was like really invested.
Yeah, definitely. Same.
All right. Well, my number six movie of the year is also a movie that is mostly about, like I said earlier, the complexities of navigating a marriage, and that is Maestro from Bradley Cooper. This is a movie that previously I was really anticipating because I loved A Star Is Born. I thought that that was a beautiful film. I'm really excited about Bradley Cooper's career as a director. But the buzz around this movie has been quite mixed. Yeah. And, like, you know, some people really don't like this movie.
Yeah.
So I kind of put off watching it. I kind of thought, okay, look, there's other movies that are, you know, getting much more praise that I want to prioritize. And I only watched this movie about two nights ago. And my biggest regret, and I don't even know if I had the opportunity or not, but my biggest regret is that I didn't get to see this movie in a theater. Mm. Because this movie is so beautiful. I think it's beautiful, and mostly beautiful visually. The cinematography in this film is stunning. And it is also, I think, emotionally a very beautiful story about a complicated man and an incredibly complicated marriage that is so full of love. And I was wowed by it every moment. I loved how ambitious this movie was. I loved how full throttle it went. I love that, in my opinion, this movie does not fall into the traps of what a lot of biopics can fall into. I feel like it has interesting questions about fame and marriage, and less interesting, like, it's less interested in saying, here are all the things that made a famous man famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's about a relationship over the life as opposed to a one person.
A retelling of events, yeah. You know? Yeah. It's also just about, like, spoiler alert, there's some death in this movie as well that, of course, as someone who is, like, grieving the death of a parent, I connected to very deeply. And ultimately, I was just incredibly moved by it. I don't know that I have much more to say. Have you seen Maestro?
I have seen Maestro. For me, it didn't... There are some of the best performances and best scenes of the year are in this movie for me. But overall, it didn't congeal as a movie that connected with me at all. But like the intro of the how this movie starts is like 10 out of 10. yeah. Snoopy in the vestibule, 10 out yes. of 10. His yes. conversation with his daughter, 10 out of 10. Like, there are some fantastic things in this movie. But overall, it just didn't work for me as a
whole. That makes sense. There were moments in this movie where I found myself, like, losing interest or understanding why some people would, like, not be connecting with this film. Hmm. But my overarching feeling throughout most of the film was just, like, so engaged, so in awe of how beautiful it was. So in awe of the performances, this is a technical thing that I want to bring up, but the best makeup old age makeup I've ever seen in my life. Like,
oh, so good. Yeah.
Which is, I think it is impressive. It is Bradley Cooper plays Leonard. I haven't even said for anyone who doesn't know, Maestro is about Leonard Bernstein and his marriage. And a little bit about his career as well. Bradley Cooper plays him from like the 20s to his, I don't know how old he was at the end, but like his, you know, old age.
And, which is usually a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And, or requires like CGI in a way that is really annoying. Yeah. And I there may be some CGI was used in this film. I don't know. But when you were looking at Bradley Cooper as old Leonard Bernstein and the way his like, neck skin looks like an old man's neck skin. It's like, it looks as real as anything you can imagine. Like, and that is so impressive to me.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm usually very forgiving of like old age makeup, especially as long as it's like not the whole movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you need to age up an actor for a scene or two, I'm very forgiving of that. I'm like, yeah, that's what you need to do to tell the story. I like theater. You know, like, this is just, it feels a little bit theatrical. This is, like, a transformation that I couldn't believe happened. And I just want to call out, like, I feel like we often forget the technical work that, like, costumes and hair and makeup brings to film. We forget to call that out. And I think it's really meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
What is your number where we've reached our top fives?
Yes, top half now.
Which for me personally is usually where I feel the most solid. Like my bottom half of my list usually can be very interchangeable sometimes with my runner-ups.
Yeah.
But my top half is where I feel like, yeah, these are definitely my tops.
That's how it usually is for me. There's usually a cutoff line around four or five where I'm just like, this is it for sure. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
so what's your number five movie of the year?
My number five, Asteroid City. Ugh. I feel like Wes Anderson movies continue to get more and more like Wes Anderson-y. And after his last movie, The French Dispatch, I thought, who knows, maybe he's crossed into some ultra meta side of himself that I can no longer really connect with. And that, but then came Asteroid City. And I loved how vulnerable all of the characters are. This is one of the few movies that we actually talked about last year on the podcast.
Yes.
And I'll say the same thing I said last time. I feel like how much these characters end up bumping into each other and knowing they need help but not able to ask for it and watching kind of the fear of the unknown, whether that be, you know, the grief of losing someone or an alien showing up, watching that fear kind of steer people in different directions and how the connections that do get made aren't necessarily clean and tidy, but knowing how close they have to hold on to them anyway. I thought it was a beautiful movie. I really enjoyed it. I love Wes Anderson's style and seeing it paired with a truly emotional story for the first time in a long time felt good.
You know, this isn't a movie that worked for me, but I can't help but deny that there are scenes from this movie that have stayed with me to this day that, like, I think are so beautifully rendered. and performance in this movie that I will praise till the end of my days, you know? Yeah. So I'm very happy to see that, like, this is something that resonated with you and made it to your list.
Definitely. And as always, the Academy Award is terrible at nominating best song, and for them to leave out O Alien Who Art in Heaven is a travesty.
One of my favorite musical moments of the year.
So funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you, there's some other songs that did not get Academy recognition this year I'm pissed about.
Sadly. Yep.
Yeah.
They're bad at it. They're really bad at picking songs.
They really are. Okay. My number five of the year, you know, I mentioned earlier that I had the time of my life seeing Saltburn in theaters. Like, I had so much fun with that movie.
Yeah.
My number five is the movie that I had the most fun time of the whole year watching.
Here we go.
And that is Bottoms.
Yes. This is what I thought was going to be your number 10.
Interesting. No, Bottoms is so good. It had to be much higher on my list. It is directed by Emma Seligman, starring Rachel Sennett and Iowa Debri. The premise of Bottoms, for anyone who isn't familiar, is that Rachel Sennett and Iowa Debri play high school lesbians that are kind of social outcasts, and they start a female fight club at their school in an attempt to hook up with hot cheerleaders. A fantastic premise, if I do say so myself.
Agreed.
This movie, I love comedies. And I feel like we are slowly but surely losing, like, true blue comedies.
Yeah.
Movies that were, like, that is the express purpose, is to be incredibly funny and have a great time. And this movie is, like, bringing back, like, the high school comedy, which is a genre that I hold so near and dear to my heart. When I think about, like, quote-unquote high school comedies that have been made in the last 5, even maybe 10 years, they've been kind of depressing. A lot of them have been, like, these straight-to-Netflix rom-coms, for the most part, that are of varying levels of successful. But this reminds me of, like, the high school comedies of our heyday. Like, I think of Bring It On. I do think of, like, Mean Girls. I think of I'm trying to think of another one. Bring It On is, like, the biggest one that comes to my mind.
Yeah. And you can tell it's, like, influenced by that to an extent as well.
Yeah. Even almost 10 Things I Hate About You, you know, which is a little bit more of a romance.
Yeah.
But, like, still,
I would even throw Napoleon Dynamite in the mix.
You know what? That makes a lot of sense to me. Movies that, like, have a little bit of a bite to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie has quite a bit of a bite. It is violent in a fun way. Like, an actual, like, the way that these girls get a little bit bloody and punch each other in the face is fun, and I'll say it, a little sexy. Like, the violence of it is, like, and they're playing with that, right? There's a lot that's sexy and fun about this movie, but the idea of, like, these girls getting, like, aggressive and physical with each other is something that you just don't get to see that often. And Iowa Debri's having, like, an incredible year, but she, like, is proving herself to be, like, a movie star in this movie. Something that I've recently thought about is, like, how much in this movie particular she reminds me of Michael Cera, and I say that in such a positive way.
Yeah.
Like, she brings this to this character, this, like, uncomfortableness paired with such a sweet lovability, and, like, a straight man almost, like, sensibility to the comedy, while also still being able to, like, play into the big laugh moments and generate big laugh moments herself. She's so good in this. The direction of this film, like, how absurd it gets, well, it feels like the perfect blend of, like, grounded and absurd. I loved the music choices in this movie. There's a needle drop in this song that, like, I actually wanted to start clapping when it happened. Like, I'm not going to be the person that claps in a movie theater on a Tuesday night, but, like, I had to stop myself. Yeah, and like just the way that this movie looks at high school in a surreal way that is that felt so true. I had so much fun. I think this movie is one that like the moment it became available for purchase on iTunes, like literally like the morning I woke up that it was available, I purchased this movie because I knew I was going to watch it so many times.
Nice.
Did you see this movie?
I did see it. Bottoms is the last movie that I saw in American theater.
Oh, wow.
So it's great. I was shocked by how much I liked it. I was shocked by the tone of it because I went into it. I think I saw like a teaser trailer early on and was immediately like, well, I'm definitely watching it. I don't have to pay attention to anything else about it from here on out.
Yeah.
So I think I was surprised by the tone of it, but I think it works really, really well for the kind of the, again, it's a high school movie. It is bringing a lot of the over the top high school energy to a story that is over the top and ridiculous in a way that I think works perfectly for this movie. I'm impressed with everyone involved. The whole cast is fantastic. And I mean, everyone in it or everyone who talked about it has continued to talk about Marshawn Lynch as one of the teachers in this. He's hilarious. He's been in a lot of stuff recently that I just think people just need to let him do his thing in movies.
Yeah.
And a movie like this where you get to improvise and really cut around great performances end up working really, really well. So I was excited to see it. I'm glad it's on your list.
Yeah. That reminds me, like, this cast, everyone in this movie understands the movie that they are in.
Yes.
And the tone really well. That really stands out. This movie also, like, introduced a lot of new actors to me in a way that was so exciting.
A lot of people that I looked them up afterwards and I'm like, okay, I haven't seen you in anything, but I know I will be seeing you in stuff very soon.
Absolutely. Havana Rose Liu is, I mean, she's so funny in this movie, but also her face is like, I want to see this on 100 big screens. Like, she has a movie star face, like the face you write home about kind of face.
Yeah.
She's so good in this. Ruby Cruz, I think, is giving like comedic, but a little bit of a heartthrob in this movie. Kaia Gerber, never seen Kaia Gerber in anything before. She's so funny.
Yeah.
It was also funny. I watched this movie with some friends and one of the friends was like, wow, she looks so much like Cindy Crawford. And I had to be like, well, yeah, she is Cindy Crawford's daughter. So you're right on the money with that one.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Miles Fowler plays the male best friend to the lead jock.
Oh, he's great.
He's so funny. And then lastly, you have like Nicholas Galitzine, who is about to like be huge. He's already been in a couple of big things, Red, White, and Royal Blue. Yep. I didn't see Purple Heart on Netflix, but that was like a big Netflix hit. It doesn't seem like my kind of movie, but you know, it did really well. He's about to be in this movie called The Idea of You with Anne Hathaway. Have you heard of this?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
It's basically like Harry Styles, One Direction fan fiction. And
he's playing the
Harry Styles role. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And yeah, it's about like a mom who like basically starts having sex with Harry Styles, essentially, is what the premise of the romance novel is. And then he's also about to be in that series with Julianne Moore. I forget what it's called, but he plays like this like young guy who's like seducing the King of England, I think.
Oh, Marion, you know
George.
Talking
about? Yes. 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 So anyway, it's just like he's having so much fun in this movie and it's fun to see someone on the brink of like big stardom, you know?
Yeah.
I can't say enough good things about Bottoms.
Great.
That being said, what is your number four movie of the year?
My number four movie, which I'm positive we will talk about later, is Barbie. this is where I'm putting the movie of the year. Barbie made $1 billion. It's a towering success, and I'm so thrilled. I saw this movie 3 times in theaters, and every time felt like a party, even post-Barbenheimer stuff, like people were still going back months later being like, yes, I'm excited to see this. So the joy of seeing a movie like this that is, I think, coming from the We heard about this when it was announced that they were doing this movie. You've got Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach writing a Barbie movie. And it's like, yeah, it would be fun to get their take on it. She's directing it, which is like, that's perfect. I would absolutely love to see her take on it. To, you know, everyone who ends up getting cast in this movie over time, you're like, this is actually exciting, but it can't be good, right? Like, this can't actually work. It's so IP driven that it's going to be
I think there was like an idea, like, it'll be good for an IP movie.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, yeah.
Like the way that we kind of view good Marvel movies. Like, right. Like they're good for Marvel movies.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, and for it to be actually good and actually just, I mean, again, the movie of the year is so impressive. And I give all credit to Margot Robbie for setting this thing up, for going and finding Greta Gerwig to do this, and for Greta for actually making this happen. Like, it's truly an incredible thing. Barbie is fantastic. This is one of the other ones on the list that I would recommend. Literally everyone needs to see it. I've heard a lot of people give the criticism that this is like a reductive, you know, almost first look at feminism, and in my mind a lot of times this probably might be someone's first introduction to any type of, you know, feminism stuff. And that's okay. Like, you can have movies that are like that. This is for a first step kind of a thing. Like, every movie doesn't have to be the deepest I don't know, introspective look at something. It's okay to have movies that are fun and also talk about serious subjects in ways that matter to people. And that's how I felt about Barbie, that this is actually a very, very good movie that is one of the things that I enjoyed the absolute most this year, which is impressive.
You know, there's been a lot of conversation around Barbie lately because the Oscar nominations just came out.
Yeah.
And it did not get a Best Director or a Best Actress nom. And notably, Anatomy of a Fall did get both of those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, Anatomy of Fall is of the five best director nominees. It's the only one with a female director. And unfortunately, those people who are upset about Barbie not getting that nomination, it feels like there's like this pitting against these two movies, or like a lot of people talking about people who are big Anatomy of the Fall fans being like, this is actually a movie about feminism, you know, versus
right.
what Barbie is doing. And that's such a frustrating conversation to witness, because my mindset of this is like, how incredible this year that we got these both of these movies, you know, these two incredibly different looks at like female experiences and different styles and takes on what feminism looks like, you know. I'm so like grateful for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that you can have analysis of womanhood on very different levels, and both of them are incredibly valuable. I was curious if this was going to end up on your list. I knew you liked the movie, but I couldn't remember exactly like to what extent or to what degree.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited that it landed this high on your list this year.
I'm thrilled with it. Barbie is fantastic. And if there's anybody who hasn't seen it, which would be shocking at this point, go see it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my number four movie of the year is a movie we talked about quite a bit in relation to Barbie, and that is Oppenheimer. I'm not going to say too much about it, because we did a very in-depth podcast about Oppenheimer that if you want to hear like all my intricate thoughts on that movie, go listen to that podcast. What I will say is I remembered it being like technically incredible, but I saw it, you know, like over 6 months ago. And so yesterday, it's back in theaters. I went and saw it in IMAX, the first time I hadn't seen it in IMAX.
Okay.
And wow, I was like, I was a little bit late to my movie screening, which I didn't mind because I'd already seen this movie, you know. I was about like 10 minutes late, I would say. So I get in a little bit late. I sit down, maybe 30 seconds into whatever scene I jumped in on, looking at it on an IMAX screen, I was like, oh, this is the best movie of the year. Like, it's not my number one, but it is my best picture pick for the year. Like, and this is what usually happens, is around the number 4 or 5 mark on my list is where I tend to put the movie that I think is culturally the best picture of the year.
Yeah.
This Oppenheimer is some of the most masterful filmmaking I have ever seen. Every technical element you can think of when it comes to a film, the pacing, the script, the visuals, the performances, the technical aspect, everything in this movie is operating, I think, at the highest degree. It's a marvel to behold. Making my list, for something to make my list, it usually has to either affect me emotionally deeply, be something I want to revisit countless times, or it has to wow me and to like a large degree. And that's where Oppenheimer falls. I'm not incredibly emotionally moved by Oppenheimer. I think there are things that are emotionally moving in the film, but like it is not a movie that I connect with on a deep emotional level. But the mastery of skill that's being presented here is so undeniable that it has to be this high on my list. So I think Oppenheimer is really, really incredible. It's my number 4. Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I think it's a stunning achievement, and it is my number 3.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's Nolan at his best. Like, I think I like a couple of his movies more, but from a filmmaking perspective, as you said, like, it doesn't get much better than this. Like,
yeah.
Truly incredible. Cillian Murphy is perfect. Robert Downey Jr. is perfect. Every A and B list actor who ends up in a B or C list role just to be in this movie is perfect. What it says about, like, who gets to tell the story of America and how, like, the collaborative nature of discovery and all the innovation that happens in this ends up getting corrupted by the military industrial complex. That's a fine line to walk. And I don't know that it worked for everybody, but it really worked for me. I think, like you said, this isn't a movie that I'm going to, it didn't move me, like some of the, like most of the other movies on this list. But as an achievement of filmmaking, it is truly incredible. And I'm shocked that it is also a blockbuster.
it's
great.
It's interesting. This movie also, one thing on this second watch viewing of it how many times did you get to see it? Did you only get to see it once?
I saw it twice.
Okay. Yeah. Upon rewatch, another thing that really struck me was the way, what this movie has to say about power is gained, held, and like what you will compromise on to maintain power, you know?
Yeah.
I think this movie has so many interesting things to say. And there's a lot of Oscar-y movies about historical events or biopics, right? This is both. And this is one where it's like, okay, it is not an overstatement to say he is one of the most important men in history, you know?
Yeah.
And like every aspect of these events and his personal life is super relevant to the way history plays out on a global scale.
Yeah.
And there's just not that many people you can say that about. And in addition to him being super important to history, this presentation of him in this movie is also super interesting and entertaining and compelling.
Right. Like,
the Oppenheimer is not this like stoic, you know, genius that happened to have this large impact on the world. He's like this charismatic, fascinating guy, you know? Not many movies like get to say they have that much cultural relevancy like baked into the premise. So that's also something that makes it undeniable.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Definitely. Well, I'm going to move into my number 3. Basically, you and I just swapped places because my number 3 is Barbie. Yeah. You know, part of me, so like I said, I went to see Oppenheimer last night in IMAX, was wowed by it again. And then previously I had Barbie as 3 and Oppenheimer as 4 on my list. And part of me was like, okay, maybe I need to swap those because like I just witnessed like a marvel of filmmaking, right?
Yeah.
So I went home, and even though I have seen Barbie 3 times already, I wasn't planning on rewatching it because I feel like I've seen it a lot. It's so soaked into the cultural consciousness that even though, like, I feel like I'm constantly revisiting Barbie, you know?
Yeah.
Just being online. I wasn't planning on rewatching it, but after seeing Oppenheimer, I decided to go home and watch Barbie again. And I'm so glad I did because it just reinforced my feelings on this movie, which is that this movie brings me so much joy. I can't believe they were able to pull it off. I think something that like people have maybe in the, like I said, in this like cultural conversation about Barbie online, I think people forget how weird and daring this movie actually is.
Yeah.
I think people are taking all of the like the consumer level of Barbie and how like widely beloved it is as this like frothy, you know, silly movie, which it is frothy and silly, which is a great thing about mm-hmm. it. But I think that this movie is also like really weird in ways that like no one could have predicted the Barbie movie to be.
Right.
I'm so impressed by that. I'm so impressed by, I love Greta Gerwig so much, and I'm impressed at how the movies that I have seen her make, you know, her directorial outings, I'm sure there are compromises that happen. I'm sure in any creative output there are compromises that happen. But from my take, she doesn't seem to compromise her, like, personality and her vision. She brings so much of herself of, I think she brings, like, generationally a lot of, like, her viewpoints on things that I feel really represented by. She's a little bit older than me, but still, like, I connect with her on a deep level. Like, at least her work, I should say. Barbie is joyous. It is, I think, emotionally very deep. I think it is a movie about girlhood and womanhood that meant so much to me. I'm really happy that each time I revisit it, that is reinforced.
Yeah.
That all my feelings on that are reinforced. So, yeah, that's my number three movie of the year.
Real quick, was Lady Bird on your top 10 of that year?
You know, I need to go double check. It might not have been. Lady Bird is a movie that the first time I saw it, I thought, oh yeah, that's good, but like, it's not as good as everyone says it is. And through time, I have begun to appreciate like how actually incredible Lady Bird is.
Yeah. I had to go back and check, but Greta Gerwig is the only director who their first three you know, runs at it are on my list every single time. So,
what year did Lady Bird come out? Was that 2017? No, it was not on my top 10. It was number 14. Ah. So, like, I liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
But just not the top of the year.
Yeah.
A year with, I will just say, Columbus, Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Get Out. Like, it was a big year.
Yeah.
Okay. Lucas, what's your number two movie of the year?
My number two movie is The Holdovers. This is a movie about a teacher at a New England prep school who has to remain on campus during the Christmas break to basically babysit the few students who don't have anywhere else to go. At one point, Paul Giamatti's character says, "I find the world a bitter and complicated place, and it seems to feel the same way about me." And for me, that summed up a lot about what this movie is trying to do, is kind of explore the bitterness that people have for the world that gets expressed really directed at specific people. And I think a coming together of friendships into kind of a faux family is always going to, you know, check my box here. And I think this movie does an excellent job of that. I think Paul Giamatti is great, but the standout for me is Divine Joy Randolph. She's incredible in this role. And I think she makes this role of the basically the cook at the school who has lost her son in the Vietnam War so much deeper than it could have been. And really, I think, rounds out this movie in a way that I think I could have fallen flat otherwise. But this movie is a Christmas movie. It is a very sweet movie, and it's one that I will be rewatching next year for sure.
This is a movie that I thought was very good. It didn't make my list. Yeah. But I have such warm feelings towards this movie. I think this movie, better than any movie that I've seen this year, and I've seen quite a few period pieces this year, like, embraces the period.
Yeah.
And, like, the way I've told people who haven't seen this movie yet is that this movie doesn't feel like a movie set in the 70s. It feels like a movie made in the 70s.
Right.
It's so impressive.
Yeah.
How thoroughly they were able to, like, make you feel like this is a movie happening in that time.
Right. And I feel like people who make movies, like, period pieces are always like, I want to shoot on film that was around in this area and all of this. And this movie was shot digitally. Like, it was made very modern, but set to resemble the 70s in a way that I think is so impressive for being shot on digital and being shot on location and all of these things that just make it so difficult to really lean into that. And Alexander Payne did a fantastic job. It's well written. It's well directed. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And newcomer Dominic Sessa is one of the starring characters in this, starring actors in this film. I do just get a kick out of new talent, you know,
like, same.
Seeing someone at the start of their career and being excited for what we'll get to see from them in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And also I'm very much rooting for Divine Joy Randolph.
Like, fingers crossed.
You're right. She is the heart of this film in a way that, like, is so necessary. You know, the Twitter format, like, when someone says something and then they do in parentheses positive.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my number two film of the year, this movie emotionally devastated me in ways I didn't realize were possible. Parentheses positive. And that is All of Us Strangers.
Yes, I knew this was going to be on your list. As soon as I moved, as soon as I saw it, I was like, this is going to be in her top five for sure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, here's what I will say. It's a film from Andrew Haig, a director who I really love, starring Andrew Scott. Andrew Scott plays a gay man who, when he was 12, his parents died. And now, as an adult, through some sort of magical realism, he is able to visit his childhood home and speak to the version of his parents who were alive when he was 12. And as an adult, kind of, like, get to know them. So it stars Andrew Scott. Paul Mescal plays, like, a love interest. Jamie Bell and Claire Foy play the parents. This is a movie that I don't even need to see a trailer. You just tell me that description, those actors, that director. I'm like, I'm sold. I'm going to love this movie. This is also a movie that in any year, I would think that this movie is a masterpiece and in such a beautiful, beautiful story. This year, a year that I have lost my father. I mean, so I just want to prepare everyone that I'm coming at this movie with it being incredibly personal to me, right? I think anyone that's lost a parent would probably come at this movie with the same feelings, although for me it is particularly fresh, you know. But it's just about a person getting a chance to say the things to their parents that there's never enough time to say. And reckoning with your parent, your lost parent, or parents in this movie, getting to know the person that you thought they would never get to know. This is a movie that I think is beautifully written, beautifully performed. Another thing that I really love about this film, and I love about Andrew Haig's work specifically, but that this film, I think, explores masterfully, is it's just a look at, like, what is intimacy and how important intimacy is to the human spirit. And this film explores all types of intimacy. It explores sexual intimacy in a way that I found beautiful and hot and exciting and real. It explores romantic intimacy, familial intimacy, explores both physical and emotional intimacy and how those things are separate and also intertwined in both a romantic relationship and in a family relationship. I I was blown away by this movie, and I cried the whole time. Like, I was a mess this whole movie. Andrew Scott, I think, is an incredible, incredible actor. I think the work that he has to do in this film is so impressive. Paul Mescal continues to wow me. He is one of, like, my number one guys right now. Yeah. I can't wait to see what his career is going to look like. He, like, talk about someone who's about to be huge, huge.
Yeah.
I warn everyone to go into this movie knowing how emotionally affecting it will be, but I urge everyone to see this movie and to not let that emotional output that you're going to probably experience, like, prevent you from seeing this movie, because it's, I think it is incredible, incredible work.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I think I saw it on Friday, and walking out of it, I was just like I have no bad things to say about it at all.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure as another lonely guy in London, you know, that all of that resonates real well for me.
But yeah.
I also think, I was talking to Rebecca about it, and I was like, I feel like I came to this movie too early. Like, if I see this movie, not even later in life, but just like later, it will hit harder in a way that, like, I'm excited to revisit in the future. So it didn't make my list, but it is definitely in the honorable mentions, and it is something I am recommending to literally everyone I know.
Yeah. I'm glad you also mentioned, I love the way this film depicts loneliness and, like, reckons with loneliness. That's something that, like, is especially meaningful to me, and I think it does so really beautifully. Andrew Haig is, I think, really one of the special ones out there. Made me want to go revisit, like, everything he's made.
Same.
All right, well, we have reached it, Lucas. What is your number one movie of the year?
My number one movie of the year, which I'm assuming is also your number one movie of the year, is Past Lives.
Yes, that's my number one.
Here we go. We did it again.
Yeah. I love it when we do that.
I do too. It's great. For those of you who haven't seen it, this is about two old friends from Korea reconnecting in New York after one immigrated away as a child. And they're just, it's a walk and talk movie. They're coming together to kind of see each other again and figure out what that means for their lives, you know? This movie is so gentle and so loving, and it reminds me a little bit of, I mean, Nicole Hofstetter's movie, like, specifically, You Hurt My Feelings, like, just the kindness and love inside of a marriage and what that means for your relationships outside of a marriage is just incredible in this movie. It's so nuanced. It does not go the way that most people would, make this movie go. If you took the same premise and gave it to a bunch of different people, nobody would make this movie. And someone did, and it's incredible. I think Celine Song is a great writer. This is her first film. She's done a lot of theater. I'm thrilled that she is also nominated for Best Picture here. For this movie to get in was a surprise. I think, like, when it came out, when did we talk about this? Like, April or whatever?
Like, May? Maybe?
Yeah. We loved it, but I didn't think it had a chance at Best Picture like, at that point in time. And I'm so, so happy that it's here.
Yeah, this movie is so, so special. It's another movie that I watched three movies yesterday. I watched Oppenheimer, Barbie, and Past Lives.
Wow, yeah.
Just in preparation for this. Also because, like, Past Lives has been my number one movie of the year since I saw it. And before we did this episode, I wanted to just double check, especially because I had such a strong reaction to All of Us Strangers.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure, like, is this movie as special as I remembered it to be? And kind of, like, as soon as I turned it on, I was like, absolutely it is. This film is deeply romantic. Like, it is romantic in the ways that I lose my mind over. It actually is maybe one of the most romantic movies I've ever seen. And that romance is expressed in so many different ways, in so many quiet, subtle ways that I find incredibly impactful. And there's multiple romances in this, which I also think is fascinating and so very real.
Yeah.
I think I love a romance, you know, a rom-com, a romance, a romantic drama. I love a sweeping period piece, you know, like this is my genre. But many of them do not reckon with the reality of life, which is that most people fall in love multiple times in their life, and those loves intertwine in ways that are complicated and messy. And this movie is actually not that messy, ultimately. Like, this is... I will spoil a little bit. There, no affair happens in this film. But I love the beauty of the marriage that exists in this film and how much grace and understanding is present in that marriage for the complexities of, like, relationships and emotions. And I also love the connection that our two leads have, and how they explore the ideas of, like, identity and fate and longing and how we can build a person up in our heads and how that's not who they are in the real world. Just every single thing about this movie is very special to me. The music, I think, is so beautiful. It's shot in New York, and it has this dreamy grayness to it.
It looks fantastic.
You know, I'm usually the person that's like, I love color, which is, I love Barbie. I love, yeah. I hate movies that are like brown and blue and gray, you know?
Yeah.
And this movie is so gray, and it's beautiful. I don't know how she did it, but she made me love a gray movie. And it's just like, it also harkens back to, like, some of the grand romantic movies where New York is, like, this beautiful romantic setting. It's, like, taking advantage of that in really smart ways. And, yeah, I just think it's beautiful. I think it's a movie that will stay with me for a very long time. It reminds me so much of my reaction to Columbus is so incredibly similar to my reaction to this movie.
I watched this movie for the first time in the U.S. and then watched it this week again to revisit it. And the difference of being on the other side of an immigration is huge in my kind of reading of this movie. I think it's such a big part of it, of just like the cultural change of like leaving your past behind in a way that isn't like cutting it off, but in a way that is like you will change and you will have a different life like this.
Yeah.
That will forever separate you to an extent from your old life. And I just think that hit harder now for me. So,
yeah,
but it's a brilliant movie. Like,
something I'm thinking of with you and also with this movie is like how much like this is a choice you are making.
Yeah.
Like, and how much like that deliberateness is important to the way you think about immigration. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, I'm so excited that we both felt this way about this movie. Also, I will say that I speak about it in more in depth and probably more eloquently on our Past Lives episode.
Same.
If you want a better conversation about it, I would recommend people revisit that episode. Yeah. All right. So now that we've gotten our top tens out of the way, let's go over some of our honorable mentions, things that almost made our list.
Real quick, how many of your top tens were nominated for Best Picture?
Half of them. Five.
I'm at seven.
Wow. That is wild.
It's wild. Poor Things.
Seven of the 10 nominees Anatomy of the are Fall. On your...
Yeah. Barbie, Oppenheimer, Holdovers, Past Lives. Yeah. It's insane. My list never lines up like this, but I just was completely in sync with the Academy this year for some reason.
Well, and I think that's a testament to just how good of a movie this year it is.
Yeah.
Like, that these movies are so undeniably good.
Right. Right. It's incredible.
Yeah. I think that really is incredible. Yeah. I looked at my list. Five of them are... Best Picture nominees, and like I said earlier, five of them have to deal with like marriage and navigating marriage.
Yeah.
which is, and then let me see, one, two, three of them, for me at least, were also about like grieving the death of a loved one.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny. I have seven Best Picture nominees, and the other three aren't nominated for a single award.
What a fun mix.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of the movies that didn't make your list that almost did.
Yes. All of Us Strangers is right up there as a close one. Some of the other honorable mentions that I have are Godland, which is a Danish film, set in Iceland, mostly in Danish, but about a priest who goes to Iceland to build a church, but in reality, he's going to take pictures. And it's set in the 19th century, and I really loved this movie. I don't think most people would like it. It is very long, and as Rebecca said, extremely boring. Really connected with me. Another one.
I really would love, like, every time you write a Letterboxd review. Well, you don't really write a Letterboxd
review. I don't.
But like, I would love like a little addendum of like Rebecca's take on it. Like, you give it 5 stars. Rebecca says extremely boring.
Yeah. Well, Rebecca's for Saltburn was, I wish I'd read the Wikipedia page before I walked into this.
Let me tell you, I would maybe recommend people read the Wikipedia page for The Iron Claw, just so that you can like prep yourself.
Know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
A couple more honorable mentions for me is the movie A Fire. It is a German film by Christian Petzold, who...
I really wanted to see that one.
It's very good. Yeah. I think you would like it. I'm on and off on his movies. I really loved his movie Phoenix. It was on my list in 2014.
Oh, Phoenix is so good.
So good. He has another movie, Transit, which is really good. But A Fire is about basically a writer who goes off on a writer. It's Friends at a Cabin.
Which is one of your genres.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is strangers and friends at a cabin and making friends with the people at the cabin, like all of that together. But it's about a writer who just is having a hard time. And with him having these relationships that he kind of makes and meets at this cabin kind of change his perspective on life in a way that is really beautiful. I loved it a lot.
Adding it to my list.
Yeah, you should. And then my last honorable mention is an animated movie called Nimona. I think you would love this movie.
Okay.
I really, really liked it. Chloe Grace Moretz and Riz Ahmed star in this movie. They are true geniuses as far as the vocal casting goes. Like, they are incredible. But this is about a futuristic medieval world, which is very fun to see. But Riz Ahmed plays a knight who gets framed for committing a crime and has to go on the hunt to restore his reputation. It is a kid's movie, but it is a kid's movie, I would say, on the level of like a Pixar movie. I would say the best animated film of the year for me. It's incredible.
I have not seen many animated movies this year, but that is one that I'll need to check out. Okay,
on Netflix. It's available.
Okay, here are some of mine. Like I said earlier, I really had a top 13, and I had a really hard time figuring out which three I was going to cut off. So I mentioned already that Poor Things is one of those three that I love, but just didn't make my list. The other two I watched this week, and maybe if I had more time to sit with them, they might have made the list, but the recency of it all just made it hard for me to put it on there. The first is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Ugh, yeah.
So this is the movie that I think is a better pairing with Barbie. I think both of these movies are about, like, discovering womanhood and going through puberty. And they're also both about mother-daughter relationships. And I was so... I think this movie is so, so sweet. And, it's been said by a lot of people that have seen this movie, like, this is the common thing that's being said, is like, wow, Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
And so I went into this expecting her to be good, and then you watch it, and you really are like, wow, Rachel McAdams.
I know, right? She's so good.
She's so good in this. And it also made me realize, like, I've always been a Rachel McAdams fan, but when you think about her filmography, it's like, Rachel McAdams always delivers.
Yeah.
She's like put out, and she's also such a quiet celebrity. Like, you don't hear about her in the press. She doesn't do a lot of like, awards promotion. And yet she is constantly delivering comedic and dramatic performances that are just stellar.
Yeah.
Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, I think is, a movie that like takes young girls very seriously, even though it is a lighthearted movie. And I think that's really special. I also really loved How to Blow Up a Pipeline.
Yes. I'm glad this made your list.
It came so close to making my top 10. How to Blow Up a Pipeline is a thriller in the vein of a heist movie almost.
Yeah.
About eco-terrorist planning to blow up a pipeline in Texas. A group of people from all different walks of life coming together to, you know, enact this, like, explosion.
Yeah, if you like heist movies, you will like this movie for sure.
Yeah. This movie is so tight. Like, I was so engaged the entire time. Like, could not look away from the screen. Really invested. I loved all of the individual stories. I love the way that this movie plays with the timeline. And I think it's really, really special and exciting. And it came really close to making my list because it's just so excellently made.
Yeah.
All right. So now that we've talked about some of our favorite movies of the year, we have a few categories that we always do in our top 10 episode. The first one is, we go a little negative. I like to find out, what was your most disappointing movie of 2023?
Yeah. And this is never the worst movie of 2023.
No.
This is just the movie that we had an incorrect expectation for what we ended up getting.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
For me, it is Your Place or Mine. Aline Brosh McKenna directed this. She was the writer of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Devil Wears Prada. I had my expectations way too high for this movie. I did not like this movie at all. We talked about it on the podcast for, I think it was Valentine's Day last year.
Yeah.
Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher, you know, I really thought it was going to be better than that.
Let me tell you something. This is also my most disappointing movie of 2023. It also is my worst movie of 2023. This year, those go hand in hand. It is criminal, almost, how bad this movie is. Because it should not have been this bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is a movie made by a writer-director that I really like, starring two A-list movie stars that I really like, that have both starred in rom-coms to great success.
Yeah.
There is no reason this rom-com should have been this bad. Yeah. And it's not just, like, not amazing. It's bad.
It's real bad.
This is a bad movie.
Yeah.
It is, I think, cheaply made. I think it was probably made in, like, 3 days.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe it was rushed. This is a poor excuse for filmmaking, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that this is like a Netflix, like, let's throw something together with some big names because we can. And this is not a movie that looks like any care was put into it.
Yeah.
I am someone who loves rom-coms, and I want quality rom-coms to be made.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of movie that gives rom-coms such a bad name.
Really does. Nobody comes out of this movie looking good. Actually,
no.
I will say Zoe Chow comes out of this movie looking
good. She does.
And that's
I think she is always refreshing. And I have a soft spot for Tig Notaro. And so
I do too. Yeah.
You know, I don't have any problems with Tig Notaro's performance in this film.
Yeah.
But as a whole, this movie is mostly it's the writing.
Yeah.
It is like really, really bad
it's
writing.
Rough.
But it's also like you could just tell that this movie was made, again, like I said, with very little money and very little time.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah. Okay. We've gotten our negative out of the way. What was the most surprisingly enjoyable movie of 2023? A movie that you didn't have high expectations for and you left being like, wow, that was so much better than I expected.
I'm going to keep the Zoe Chow train going with If You Were the Last. I have very low expectations for this movie, mostly because it was a Peacock original, and a Peacock original has not turned out, I would say, anything good yet. Some stuff that was like fun.
Or anything that has even made the conversation.
No, like, not at all. And yeah. I don't think this movie made the conversation. I haven't heard anyone talking about this movie at all.
Not at all.
But
not at all.
I loved this movie. This movie is very, very good. This is the first movie by director Christian Mercado. He's directed some comedy specials before. But this is his first movie. And it stars Anthony Mackie and Zoe Chow as two astronauts adrift in space, thinking that they are stuck there forever, never going to see anyone else again. And it's their conversations around relationships, sex, friends, family, like all of the things that I think you would talk to someone if they were the last person around. You would talk to them about everything. And just how far it goes in this conversation, I think is so fun. I loved their chemistry in this movie and the almost low cost nature of it for a, you know, quote unquote sci-fi movie. The way they get around the budget constraints, I think, is really innovative and fits with the movie, really, with the tone of the movie. Really.
Totally. I had zero awareness of this movie until you texted me and said, hey, you should watch this movie. I'm so glad you did because I loved it. I think it's incredibly charming.
Yeah.
And like you said, the way that they work with their budget, I think they made very charming choices. Yeah. And this is like, this is what I want from rom-coms. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Excellent chemistry. Like people writing that is interesting and thoughtful and at least in this case, very sweet and sexy and romantic. You know what this movie felt like to me? It's a direct to streaming, which we have like this. That's kind of a genre now, right? Yeah. Is like direct to streaming movies, and then even direct to streaming rom coms is like its own kind of genre. But what this felt more like to me is like a movie you'd see at South by Southwest.
Yeah, I agree.
Like an indie movie that gains some popularity on a festival circuit. That's like a low budget, just sweet little film.
Yeah.
With comedic actors that are willing to take the time to make a movie like this, you know? Yeah,
definitely. If this were like 2010, I feel like this movie would fit in really well with a lot of the movies that were at Sundance.
Totally. I loved this. I'm so glad you recommended it, and I'm going to be recommending it to a lot of other people.
Good.
Okay, so my most surprisingly enjoyable movie of 2023, I want to set the scene. Here's how I came upon this movie. I was home for the holidays, and I have a three-year-old niece that I adore, I'm obsessed with, but when she's over at the house, when we're taking care of her, when a three-year-old is around, they have full control over the TV. Like, they get to decide what is gonna, everyone's gonna have to watch, essentially. Mm-hmm. At least in our experience, that's the case. And, this three-year-old watches a lot of Cocomelon, Encanto, lately Trolls, which I don't know if you've seen Trolls.
I haven't seen any of them, no.
It's bad, bad, bad. It is.
It seemed like it. Based on the trailers grating. That play before, like, all of the movies now. Trolls are, so sound awful.
It's grating. And, you know, she rewatches them over and over, and so it's a whole thing. So we're at the house one day. We're watching Trolls on Netflix. Trolls is ending, and you know, Netflix does the thing where it's like, here are three different movies you can watch now that your movie is ending.
Yeah.
She sees one of those squares and she says, I want to watch that one. It's another animated movie that I had never heard of at all, like zero awareness of it. So we start it because it is like an animated movie about an animal and she's a 3-year old. So sure. Mm-hmm. We watched the movie called Leo. Have you heard of this movie?
I have seen it on like the little whatever on Netflix.
Okay, but you haven't seen the movie.
I haven't seen the movie.
Like, yes. But you've like seen it on available on Netflix.
Yeah.
Leo is a movie that stars Adam Sandler, an animated kids movie where Adam Sandler plays a 74-year-old lizard named Leo. That is like the class pet. He's like in a little aquarium in a classroom.
Oh.
And he realizes that he's 74. He only has 1 year left to live. He's like, the average age of lizards is like 75. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to escape this classroom and like live a grand life. And while he's attempting to do that, instead, he keeps getting sent home with the different kids in the classroom.
Yeah.
And every time he gets sent home to one of these kids, he reveals to the kids that he's a talking lizard. And the kid's like, whoa, you can talk, because it's an animated movie. Yeah. And he basically helps the kid, this like 11-year-old kid or however old they are, yeah, like deal with whatever problems they're having as a kid, like making friends, anxiety, parents, whatever it is. He like gives them advice and becomes like this cherished emotional support animal for this entire classroom. You hear like Adam Sandler plays a lizard in, yeah, an animated movie.
Yeah.
You don't have high expectations.
No.
I had no expectations putting it on. It is so funny. It's not like Pixar level, like, yeah, incredible filmmaking, but it is very, very funny. I found myself dying laughing at some of the jokes in this movie. It is kind of like, it has like a lot of adult humor in it that it's not like raunchy, but meaning that like adults would find it funny.
Yeah.
But it is an animated kids movie. I described it as the exact perfect movie for a 35-year-old and a 3-year-old to watch together, which is what happened. And I was, yeah, really surprised and had a great time with it.
Amazing.
I would, yeah. Okay. When I saw the movie, you know, come up as a thumbnail, I was like, never.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have picked this, yeah, movie to watch. Yeah. It is a movie that, like, I'm not even recommending people go out and watch.
Yeah.
But I do think specifically, if you need to watch a movie with a kid,
yeah,
in your life, it is it is one of the better options, if you've already seen, like, Encanto a million times.
Perfect.
Okay, well, let's round this out by talking about 2024, the year ahead.
Yes.
And let's go over what is our most anticipated movie of 2024, plus a few others that we're really excited about.
Do you remember what your most anticipated movie of 2023 was?
It was Barbie.
Okay. I felt like it was Barbie, but I didn't fully remember.
It was. Do you remember what yours was?
I think mine was Mission Impossible 7.
It was. How did you feel about Mission Impossible 7? And like, did it live up to expectations?
I liked it. It was fun. It did not live up, yeah, to expectations. I really enjoyed it. It was not, a part one is difficult. I feel like
it is.
I don't have a part one on my list, even though there were a million part ones this year.
Okay. Well, let's give me what your number one is. And then let's talk about our others.
Here's my problem. I want it to be a movie, okay, that comes out next year for sure. And this movie,
right,
the movie that I had in this place, has gotten pushed back. It was Mickey 17.
Oh, interesting.
Which is Bong Joon-ho's newest movie, which is originally slated for March, but it is based on the novel by Edward Ashton, uh-huh, about a future where clones are used to colonize other worlds. Stars Robert Pattinson. I'm so excited for this movie, and it now is TBD on the release date calendar.
Interesting.
So I don't know if I should pick it. Instead, I'm going to go with, probably comes as no surprise, Brad Pitt and George Clooney are back together for another movie where they play two professional fixers who find that they've both been hired for the same job. That's catnip for me. This movie is called Wolves. It is directed by John Watts, who you may know from directing all the MCU Spider-Man movies, but I really liked his directorial debut, Cop Car. So I'm excited to see him do something wholly original again. And right now, Wolves is slated for September.
Okay. And also, strangely, this movie is spelled W-O-L-F-S.
Yes. It's Wolfs, Lone Wolves, plural.
Yeah.
Kind of,
right,
is how they're,
yes,
how they're thinking about it. But yes, not wolves, but wolfs. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, this sounds incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
I have never heard of John Watts' directorial debut, so that might be something I need to revisit. This movie also has Austin Abrams in it.
Yes.
Have you seen anything with Austin Abrams?
I have. What did I see that he was in? Let me look him up.
He was in Euphoria. He was in, oh, well, we definitely saw Kings of Summer. That was a while ago. Did you see Due Revenge?
I did not see Due Revenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really your thing.
No.
He's in that, but he's very good in it. Yeah, he's really interesting. He's, I think, a very interesting young actor.
Yeah.
I always like seeing him pop up. So exciting that he's going to be in a big movie with George Clooney and Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, my number one anticipated movie of 2024. I wonder if you can guess it, because you usually can.
Yep, it's Challengers.
Yeah, it's Challengers. Now, I like it to be a movie that I haven't seen a trailer for. You know, like, right. I feel like that's more in the spirit of the game. And I've seen a lot of trailers for 2024 movies that I'm excited about right now. Probably because we're doing this episode so late in the month. But Challengers was supposed to come out in 2023. And I was anticipating it in 2023. And then the trailer came out and my anticipation shot through the roof.
Yep.
Like, it's one of my favorite trailers I've ever seen. And so now it is still my most anticipated. It is, I will say the trailer has influenced that. But also, I mean, I would have really been anticipating this movie anyway, because it is from Luca Guadagnino, who's becoming one of my favorite directors. Stars Zendaya, Mike Feist, Josh O'Connor, three incredibly exciting actors. It's sexy. It looks fun. I can't wait for this movie.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. Yeah, it can't be bad, I feel like, at this point. So hopefully.
Right. That's the thing, is that, like, it might not be my number one movie of the year.
Yeah, right.
But I have a hard time imagining it not making my top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. It's coming out in March, I think.
That's
or April.
I think April.
April, yeah. Okay, well, really, really excited about that. Okay, yeah. Now tell me about some of your other movies that you're really excited about.
Yeah, so Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse is one that's out there. It was originally March and got moved back, so it's TBD. But that's why, like, I love the Spider-Verse films. I'm excited for the third part, which should close out the story, which would be exciting. Another big one that I'm pumped about is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
Yeah, that's also on my list.
I didn't love the trailer for this movie, but I also didn't love the trailer for, what's it called?
Fury Road.
Fury Road, yes. I didn't love the trailer for Fury Road either, so I trust George Miller. I'm a huge fan of Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth. I can't wait. This is going to be a fun movie no matter what, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I have not seen or really want to see most of the Mad Max movies, but
same.
Mad Max Fury Road is so incredible that, like, a follow-up to that is, you know, beyond exciting.
Yes. This is the last movie on my list is a movie that I actually don't think will be good, but I am just excited for the conversation around it and to finally see what this movie is. It is Argylle, Matthew Vaughn's Apple TV Plus movie. Sorry, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Henry Cavill's in it, John Cena. Yeah. I'm positive it's going to be bad, but I've seen so many trailers and I'm so interested in it that I want to watch it.
This is the kind of movie that's like, because I've seen this trailer a billion times, I don't want to see this movie. Like they've ruined the movie by how
how much,
like,
the
joke on Twitter right now is like, if I have to watch that damn Argylle trailer one more time, you know? It's so funny how that happens. You know, like, how we all go. The thing is, like, we're all going to the movies a lot more at the end of the year, like catching up on, like, awards movies. So there are certain trailers that you do see frequently.
Yeah.
But it sometimes is so strange to me how one particular trailer becomes the trailer that you see a million times.
Yeah.
Okay, well, some of mine, I'm just going to kind of, like, run through the ones that I have seen trailers for. And then I have a list of ones that I haven't seen trailers for.
Okay.
So top of that list is a movie that the trailer just came out called Tuesday.
Yes.
A24 movie starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus that seems, like, fantastical and about death and has, like, a mother, daughter, and a parrot and... It just seems so up my alley.
Yeah.
Plus, after You Hurt My Feelings, I'm really, like, want more from Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Furiosa, I agree with you. Love Lies Bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
A movie starring Kristen Stewart about, like, a female bodybuilder and a romance and a murder, and it looks grungy and, like, a thriller. It looks really cool.
80s grunge is really what the vibe it's putting out, and it looks really, really good.
Yeah. Okay, this is my... I think that this looks better than Argylle, but it's kind of in that, like, vein of, like, we'll see if it's actually good.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for The Fall Guy?
Yeah. I don't know if that'll be better than Argyle. I really don't.
I feel like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This, like, blockbuster Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt action rom-com, I guess?
Yeah.
Where Emily Blunt plays a movie director, Ryan Gosling plays a stunt double, but then they get involved in some sort of actual crime. It looks strange, but I can't deny that I love Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, and Ryan Gosling seems to be doing his Ryan Gosling, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that is always works for me.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that one. Monkey Man, the trailer just came out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the directorial debut from Dev Patel, one of my top tier actors and crushes.
Yep.
He's starring in it. He's directing it. An action, sort of like vigilante, you know, movie, it seems like.
Mm.
And it looks really, really rad. Jordan Peele is producing it. There's a story about how Netflix had bought this movie, and then Jordan Peele got involved and was like, actually, we need this to be in theaters.
Yeah.
God bless Jordan Peele.
Seriously. I'm excited for it. I told you this over text, but I'm always nervous about an actor doing his directorial debut being something that he's written and I'm going to act in myself kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But then we got Bradley Cooper's Star Is Born, so.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Another one that I'm excited about because I'm going to always be excited about a Richard Linklater movie is Hitman.
Yeah.
Glenn Powell is a movie star by birth, I think. Like, not by birth, like he's a, like a Nepo baby, but like I think he was born with charisma that, like, was he was destined to be a movie star,
yeah.
You know? And, you know, part of the reason I didn't, there was a lot of reasons why I didn't watch The Killer, but part of it is, like, I don't know how much I'm interested in, like, a hitman narrative.
Yeah.
And that also, I think, makes me a little nervous about this movie, but it's a Linklater movie, so I'm going to be checking it out,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I have a few that I haven't seen trailers for that I've either heard really good buzz about or they just seems really appealing to me. One that I've heard great buzz about at Sundance is called I Saw the TV Glow.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it.
Does this have a release date yet?
That's a good point. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
But I feel like early, the movies that get released at Sundance early in the year have a better chance of getting released this year.
Yeah.
Than, like, the fall festivals, you know?
Yeah.
Another Sundance one is Girl State. We covered Boy State, the documentary about, you know, boys in high school going, participating in, like, a student government camp.
Now we get to see what the girls have been up to.
I know. And even if it's not as good, I still am just, like, glad that we're going to get, like, that follow-up.
Yeah.
There's a movie called A Real Pain. It's directed by, written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg. I think it's written by him. It's definitely directed. And it stars Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. They play cousins who, their Polish grandmother has died, and they're, like, revisiting Poland, I think. Ultimately, I'm a big fan of Jesse Eisenberg, and him working with Kieran Culkin is really exciting to me. And I've heard good things, so that just seems really up my alley. And then the very last one I'm going to mention, a movie that has been in the works for decades, and we have a release date, so it should finally be here, is Wicked Part 1.
Yeah.
I love Wicked. I love musicals. I love John Chu, you know, directed In the Heights and did an amazing job, in my opinion. So I can't wait to see what his Wicked looks like.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. I am hesitant on the actual release date, but
you think it's going to get pushed?
I think it'll get pushed, but I'm very excited about it.
They just announced that they finished filming both parts.
Ah, like, good. Okay.
This last week.
Cool.
So both parts are finished filming.
Yeah.
And the part one is coming out in November.
Great.
So
then it's happening.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Unbelievably, it's happening.
I
yeah.
Know. I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, I've had such a good time going over the movies of 2023 with you today, Lucas.
Me too.
This is my favorite episode for
it
us
is.
To do every
yes.
year.
It's great to look back, and it's great to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, it really is. So we'll be back here on the podcast probably a month from now.
Yep.
and we'll catch you up on what we've been watching since then.
Yeah, probably talking about, well, the Oscars is so far. In my head, I was like, it's probably talking about the Oscars, but that's
We'll make our Oscar predictions.
We will make our Oscar predictions, yeah.
It'll be kind of early, but that's okay, yep. You know? Like,
it's happening.
Great, we have a set schedule.
Exciting.
We're so worried about release dates that we already have a schedule planned.
I know.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Goodbye now. Goodbye.
Go away.
I'll see you soon, okay?
That's it. Go home.
Yeah.
Moving along, Padre.
Goodbye, old friend.
That's it. That's our show for tonight, people.